Well, we are in the thick of it, at least tonight, if you're following Mountain West basketball in the tournament. Got underway yesterday. Lobos play tonight. And listen, if you're one of those who fills out a bracket, this may be of interest to you. Christian Movie Madness Bracket. It's on our website in the Action Center at klyt.fm. Focus on the Family's prepared its own bracket for your enjoyment, following a similar timeline to the basketball bonanza. Now, after much deliberation, the plugged-in movie experts chose 64 Christian films and seated them in four regionals designated as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, of course. The Christian Movie Madness Bracket. It's going to pit the movies against one another in a single elimination tournament to determine which is the greatest Christian movie of all time. Now, the bracket is already available for you to look at. It's on display on a link that we've provided for you in the Action Center so you can study, maybe even watch a few movies, and be ready to make your first round pick this Sunday. So go to klyt.fm. That sounds like a lot of fun. And I'll start by asking our in-studio guest, Paul. I haven't looked at it yet, so I'm wondering if I'm going to know all these films. 64 Christian films?
That's a lot of films.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick my winner, though.
Yeah?
I'll go with The Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, the original.
That is a top five for sure for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to say my top might be Chariots of Fire.
Fair enough.
Have you seen that one?
Believe it or not, no, I have not.
Anyway, we'll talk later. And then you can tell me about it after you see it. Paul Gessing in studio from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org, and Errors of Enchantment. You can go to the website there. It's actually errorsofenchantment.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start with Paul, something you put together after you had a chance to testify on two different bills in the House Energy Committee recently as the Roundhouse continues through their session.
Yeah, was up in Santa Fe recently, had the opportunity to speak to the House Energy Committee on a few proposals. And, you know, it's a process. It's a challenge. I unfortunately don't blame people for not being willing or able to spend an entire day to get up there to Santa Fe to testify on these bills. But, that's why I try to do what I do during these sessions. And one of the bills I talked about was SB 23, which will, if adopted, raise royalty payments on New Mexico's state trust lands. Now, this is, of course, an oil and gas related bill. It's passed through the Senate. I expect that ultimately it will pass the legislature and be signed into law by the governor. We'll see. It hasn't happened yet. But I wanted to specifically speak about that because the state of New Mexico has lots and lots of money. We've got $61 billion in our sovereign wealth funds we're sitting on. We don't need to raise taxes on an industry that really funds and fuels New Mexico.
Yeah. Paul, when's the last time that surplus went down?
So that's the sovereign wealth fund, and that is money that has been set aside in large numbers during this oil and gas boom.
Okay.
So it really hasn't gone down. Now, in terms of the annual budget surplus, which is a different number, we've been hovering in the $3 billion range, maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower. But of course, government spending happens, so it's harder and harder to keep piling on those surpluses. But we're talking about an amazing amount of money that the state is sitting on. Couple other bills, one that was in that committee that morning that I had the opportunity to testify on was HB 273. This is a bill by Representative Randy Pettigrew of Hobbs. And the idea was, for the purposes of New Mexico's Energy Transition Act, a bill that passed in 2019 that's going to somehow, some way, force all electricity generation to be done by wind, solar, and with the use of batteries, very expensive. We're seeing PNM bills go up. We're seeing the potential for, in a really hot summer day, the grid being unstable and unable to get the electricity to the people. Randall Pettigrew wanted to put forth a change to that legislation to allow something called a combined cycle natural gas plant to be added into the mix. And that would have, I think, been a fabulous idea. If you'd asked me in 2019 how to do the energy transition, if you're going to do it, okay, get rid of coal, but transition with natural gas, because natural gas both works with renewables. You can turn a valve and crank up the natural gas, crank it down. We have natural gas here. It's inexpensive, and that's how I would solve our problem. It's also much greener than coal, and it's one of the reasons that the United States has, quite frankly, been able to reduce CO2 emissions at a time when China and India are dramatically increasing them. So it is a good bill. It would be a good bill if it was actually passed, but it will not be passed, unfortunately. The environmental groups really control the Democrats in this state. And then finally, HB 270. We've talked a lot about EV mandates. It wasn't heard the same day, but it was heard in the same committee. It was supposed to be heard that day, but it went on to Thursday, and I testified on HB 270 as well. This bill would overturn the governor's EV mandates, electric vehicles.
Did California overturn theirs yet?
No, and I don't see that happening. Although Gavin Newsom, their governor, seems to be trying to moderate his public image with all these podcasts he's doing. That's okay. HB 270 would have overturned the EV mandate and said that the unelected Environmental Improvement Board can no longer be in the business of adopting these kinds of proposals or regulations. It needs to be done by the legislature, which is the appropriate way to do things. Elected body representing New Mexicans.
And on a national level, you know, we're seeing the pushback with Elon Musk and saying, you know, he's not an elected official. He's not an elected official. And, you know, pushback nationally is, well, neither was Fauci or Soros or and here we are in New Mexico. Apparently, the Democrat Party thinks that it's okay to have these non-elected people setting these mandates for us. So I appreciate your work on that. I did want to ask, too, you mentioned, going to the route where you're just counting on wind. The issue that comes up is outages or brownouts. And there's been a couple states that have, essentially they have testimony to this, right?
Oh, yeah. Texas, which everybody in New Mexico thinks of just this rock rib Republican free market state, they have gone big into wind, and they had problems a few years ago. California's had problems just in general because they haven't done a good job of providing enough electricity for that state. And there's numerous problems in numerous states with moving to these unreliable sources of electricity. Now, batteries are supposed to mitigate that, but that raises your prices up dramatically.
And if you're talking green, the whole issue with batteries comes back up.
Yeah. Now, back to the EVs really quick. Now, this may be funny. This may not be funny. It depends on your perspective. But, you know, we've seen this shift in this country, including right here in New Mexico, over Elon Musk and his persona. Of course, he's the one who founded Tesla, the leading electric automobile manufacturer in the entire country. Now he is kind of persona non grata among the left, and there's been protests. I've seen them myself right here in New Mexico in Bernalillo over the the EVs that he sells and his dealerships. And I jokingly said that if I had a crystal ball, I would have told somebody to introduce a anti-Elon Musk version of the EV repeal, because like it or not, whether you're a rock rib conservative or a hard left progressive, the state of New Mexico is in the business of subsidizing currently EVs. Many of them are sold by Elon Musk and his company. And, you know, in the future, very soon, By the end of 2025, this year, the start of the 2026 model year, we are going to be mandating 43% of new vehicles sold in New Mexico be electric vehicles. And unfortunately, this bill, HB 270, the one that would have overturned the mandate, also not going to pass in this current legislature. But I sometimes wonder if maybe a bill that somehow messaged as an attack on Elon Musk, given the situation now with Mr. Musk and his kind of partisan demographic profile, it seems like he is now widely despised and derided, even though he is the inventor of the best electric vehicle on the roads.
Well, and President Trump just made everything better. He's got a shiny red Tesla now.
Yeah, which also is funny. The kind of purchase of the progressive left is now something that that Trump owns, which has to be immensely frustrating and perplexing to those people.
All right. Well, listen, Paul Gessing is our guest for the full hour today, and we'll press on with more HB 11. We're not done talking about it. As a matter of fact, when we come back, we'll jump right into it after the break on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org, errorsofenchantment.com. You'll find some great information there. Hey, before we jump back into it and the topic being HB 11, I want to let you know about a rummage sale coming up at Grace Church in the Northeast Heights. That's Louisiana and San Antonio Drive. Saturday, March 15th at 11 o'clock in the morning. All kinds of goods, including new and used adult and children's clothes, books, furniture, electronics, and a whole bunch more. Any donations are welcome before the rummage sale, and proceeds are going to support Grace Church's many ministries, including kids, adult, and missions initiatives. Details about the rummage sale at gracechurchabq.org/rummage-sale. Paul, you've put in your time, I'm sure, in the last few weeks up in Santa Fe, and HB 11 is on. I was going to say it's on everybody's radar. I wish it was.
It is on a lot of people's radars, that's for sure, and it certainly is on mine. It's something that we have followed very closely, not just from the beginning, but of course, in past legislative sessions, similar proposals have been put forth in the roundhouse.
Now, for those not familiar,
it was the paid family and medical leave bill. That's what they had been calling it. Now it is called the Family Wellness Leave and Fund and Wellness Leave Act, Welcome Child and Family Wellness Leave Act. So it got a revised name. In some ways, it became, quite frankly, a little bit better of a bill. It took for average people who might be participating in this program, which is going to be a vast majority of all New Mexicans, and we're going to be paying taxes, and our businesses will be paying taxes, but it would be 6 weeks, not 12 weeks, in terms of leave for average workers. It would still be 12 weeks for people who have a baby or adopt a baby. And that's actually something that I think a lot of folks listening probably would be happy, or at least happier with. Then it adds on top of that something that may go a little too far for a lot of folks, which is suddenly the state will be paying you $3,000 a month for having a baby or adopting a baby. So for the first 3 months of that child's life or life with you, it's $9,000 total. The problem with that legislation, aside from the mandates and the taxes, is this thing viable? Is this proposal able to be paid for by the programs that and the money that's going to flow into the system, and then the money that's going to be invested by the State Investment Council? And I've got a bit of an update for you, Steve. I was able to tune in to a committee hearing in the Senate Finance Committee. Now, I should take one step back. This plan, as revised, passed the New Mexico House last session. The paid family leave, the similar but different proposal, failed on the House floor by 2 votes. So they got that through the House. The challenge with this new version is that I don't think it's been vetted appropriately. I think it is something that there's a lot of concerns about its viability. And so the Senate Finance Committee, to their credit, held a unique meeting in the roundhouse where they didn't have the sponsors, they didn't have people testifying for and against, including myself. Instead, they simply had the analysts of the bill look at whether this program is going to be viable and how it actually work in real world, in the real world. And there were a lot of questions. I think it is going to be very challenging for the advocates of this legislation to get it through the Senate Finance Committee. Now, if they do, if the Senate Finance Committee relents and they were just blowing smoke in this kind of different form of a hearing, then it's probably going to be adopted into law. Maybe the governor vetoes it, but I really don't see that. So it's one of those things that I think in this case really highlights that if you're going to do a big new government program, kind of on the order of an entitlement program, you need to dot your I's and cross your T's. And I don't think this thing is ready for prime time. And that's why the Senate Finance Committee is really looking at it very carefully. And I hope we'll ultimately reject it.
If it were to pass as is, would it be what many were calling it, essentially the largest tax increase that New Mexicans have ever seen?
Yes, it would be a very significant tax increase and a new regulation, which will do significant harm to businesses. And that's one of the things that members of the committee were asking for, is what has been the experience in some of the other states that have done similar things. And quite honestly, I haven't seen anything like this particular proposal. There was other paid family leave proposals, but remember, this thing's been changed dramatically. But even the previous version of paid family leave was much more onerous, much more restrictive. And as it stood, 5 employees or not, or more in your business, and you're dumped into that system, it was going to cause some real problems. So I'm not trying to provide a roadmap here for our friends who support this idea, but yeah, maybe adhering a little more closely to some of the other models that have been enacted in other states, that might be a road to success for them if they want to get something passed. But so far, they've been trying to do their own unique things, and it's not going well, and I hope, again, it doesn't go well with the Senate Finance Committee, which is really the last backstop against this proposal.
Yeah, everything about it has concerned me. One of the things I do think of, yes, I do shop elsewhere than local sometimes, but when I can, I really do purpose to shop locally, and I'm going to imagine those are the businesses that are going to feel it more, a national company isn't going to like it, but it's something they'll either pull out of New Mexico if it's that bad, or, they'll be able to keep their business open because, they've got their stores across the country to support what they're doing in New Mexico. But we say business, I think, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, it's local businesses that are going to really be damaged.
Local businesses are always the ones that struggle the most to adhere to new government regulations. It's a simple fact that your Walmarts, your Amazons, whoever it may be, have enough resources available. They have attorneys.
They can weather the storm.
Compliance experts, yeah, who can make sure that they handle the regulations as affordably as possible, whereas small businesses, it's just oftentimes impossible to really adhere to every aspect of what the government is trying to impose on them.
All right, well, make sure you're communicating with your representatives, your senators, the people that represent you in the roundhouse, and we've probably got enough time to jump into this next one, Paul. Alcohol taxes dead for the session. And actually, when I saw this, obviously the obvious thought that went through my mind is, does the KLYT listener really care about this? Well, I'm sure there's ways, that the alcohol taxes are going, whether you drink or not, it's going to be an impact. Really, everyone should be dialed in here, right, Paul?
Yeah, it's tax policy, and we can certainly argue about tax rates and tax burdens on cigarettes and tobacco, alcohol, marijuana. They're all you'd call them sin tax issues there, but it's also important to note that a lot of conventions, a lot of businesses come here to New Mexico, individual stores and small businesses, we just talked about those, also need to comply with the law. Now, when we entered the session, the progressive Democrats were kind of on different sides of how to raise taxes on alcohol. They then agreed on a bill, HB 417, that would have imposed a new 6% point-of-sale tax on alcohol. It was subsequently amended to remove New Mexico-based distillers, venters, and brewers from the tax. Then that was changed again, and there were other changes to the tax that were in the process of being made in the House Tax Committee, and ultimately a majority of members of the committee, well, not a majority, an even split. You don't have to have a majority to kill a bill. You just have to have an even split. In this case, it was 6-6. And they said, this is just too much change, too many complexities. The point of sale tax would have been on it, on top of the sales, the gross receipts tax. And so the legislature, at least as it stands now, does not look like it will adopt a higher alcohol tax. Now, why am I hedging my bet? Because there will be likely a tax bill, a new out of whole cloth negotiated by behind closed doors tax bill. We don't have a number yet. It will get reported on in the media because these tax bills tend to roll together a lot of different concepts around taxation. I would love to see a tax bill that had real reductions in our taxes. I don't expect that to be the case, but whatever it means and whatever it contains, there is still a possibility that this alcohol tax or something similar to it could wind up in that bill, which is not really democracy. It's not really a good governance approach to tax policy and something that important, but it's the way things are unfortunately done in New Mexico. And we'll just be waiting and watching, among other pieces of legislation that could be moving. And of course, we're sitting here talking with less than 2 weeks left in the session. So this tax bill will have to move quickly, as it generally does, if and when it is dropped into the process.
All right. If you just tuned in, we're spending the full hour today with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org to find out more about the organization and the content we're going through. You'll find the blogs, for the most part, at errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation right after this on ABQ Connect. We are in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. We'd encourage you to go to the websites at riograndefoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com, the latter being the space where Paul and others from time to time blog about the things, these various issues that matter to you. You can get that information, and including a lot of the things we've talked about today at errorsofenchantment.com. Before we get back into it with Paul, I want to remind you on the Action Center at klyt.fm. Lighthouse Voices is back from Focus on the Family and the Colson Center. The next one is set for March 18th. That is next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock with Dr. Jeff Myers, who we actually had a chance to catch up with. You can find the archive at abqconnect.online. Again, this is a collaborative event with Focus on the Family and the Colson Center. Young people today, they're facing an unprecedented crisis of anxiety, loneliness, hopelessness. And according to the World Happiness Report, the U.S. ranks among the top 10 happiest nations. But American youth have fallen to 62nd in happiness. So what's causing this dramatic decline and how can we help? That'll be addressed along with a powerful conversation with Jeff Matthews, author of Truth Changes Everything, addressing why young people are struggling now more than ever and what can be done about it, the connection between truth, purpose, and lasting happiness, practical steps we can take to guide the next generation toward a fulfilling life. And again, it's in the Action Center at KLYT.FM. Space is limited. It's a free event. So if you want to attend, you want to go get the information and get registered, you can attend in person at the Focus on the Family Welcome Center in Colorado Springs next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock or online. It's a free event. So go to klyt.fm and find out more about the next Lighthouse Voices. Paul, we left for a break talking about various taxes and the tax bill. A little more on that. I mean, there's other things being considered. Is there anything there that's like, well, okay, raise my taxes?
Well, it is hard to say what this plan or this proposal will look like because these are truly behind closed doors conversations that are being had in the legislature. We know that New Mexico has on the order of a $3 billion annual budget surplus. We know that we're continuing as a state to pump money into these various permanent funds. And we know that New Mexico and New Mexicans, so New Mexicans as distinct from the government, remain among the most impoverished in the entire country in terms of each state and the wealth that we have and the incomes that we have. So we would like to see real reform testified. I did at the Rio Grande Foundation and the legislature on HB 275, a bill that would have eliminated New Mexico's personal income tax. I don't expect that anything that robust will be included in the tax bill. There was also a proposal attempt by Republicans to attach to the budget a $600 rebate. So $600 returned to every man, woman, and child in the state of New Mexico.
That gives about half of it back.
Yeah, that would have been a significant effort. It's not the way I want to do things for some specific reasons because, you know, you really don't influence business decisions if you just do one-off rebates. You start to have an impact on businesses and your overall economy in a much more direct way if you change the incentives for the long term by reducing, eliminating certain taxes. But we'll see what this tax proposal comes out looking like, and we'll just have to go from there, whether they include Medicaid or not Medicaid, other. There's potentially Medicaid or any number of alcohol taxes and all kinds of other taxes will be potentially included in there. You just have to wait and see, unfortunately.
All right. Well, let's get to some relatively good news. A lot of our listeners may not be aware, but from time to time, the Rio Grande Foundation hosts some great events. And there is one just around the corner, Lecture 2025, Healthcare in Crisis. Paul, what can you tell us?
Yeah, I can tell you that New Mexico is suffering from a shortage of medical providers and doctors. We don't have a real good idea of what, if anything, will happen. There is, I think, little to no appetite to address our state's medical malpractice law. That has been a slow go in terms of getting some changes made to that to make New Mexico more attractive for doctors. There's some compacts, some medical licensing compacts that could move the needle somewhat, and those are still in flux. Again, we'll know more after the 22nd when the session is complete. But We have a nationally recognized expert on healthcare policy issues named Michael Cannon. He heads up the Cato Institute's health policy efforts. Cato is, broadly speaking, I would call them a libertarian think tank up in Washington, D.C. Michael Cannon will be out on March 26th at 6:30 p.m. at the CNM Workforce Training Center. And right now, seats are available for that. You can go to riograndefoundation.org, go to the events page, go to errorsofenchantment.com, and reserve your spot. We'll have some light snacks available, but Mr. Cannon will go through some of the primary healthcare issues facing our state and nation. And we haven't done an event before at the CNM Workforce Training Center, but if you maybe are unaware, it is at 5600 Eagle Rock Avenue Northeast. It's up near Alameda. Again,
the easiest, I was looking on the map this morning for this event, and actually you probably get, I didn't look, you probably get there from Jefferson some way, but going south on the frontage road just off I-25 south of Alameda, you get to Eagle Rock and you turn west and I mean, you're there. The CNM Workforce Training Center, you can see it from the interstate, but again, that's Wednesday, March 26th at 6:30. And yeah, like you said, Paul, New Mexico remains in the midst of a medical provider shortage. I actually feel pleased that I have a primary that I'm pleased with. It's, I feel very fortunate. I think that not everyone finds themselves in that place, but riograndefoundation.org is where you go to register and get more information. Again, the name Paul mentioned was Michael Cannon of the Cato Institute. He's the director of health policy studies there. So it's going to be quite an evening. And Paul, want to thank the Rio Grande Foundation for hosting that event. And it's minimal cost. It's something, and actually, if you get your tickets before by the 14th, you'll save a few bucks.
It's priced for affordability. Tickets right now are $13.95. We're doing a little bit differently than just having that even number, but it's very affordably priced. Luncheons aren't that expensive either, but this one is just a evening event. We'll have some snacks available for folks, and then you can go home and eat dinner, or you can eat dinner before. It's just a matter of whether you're an early eater or a late eater.
And it's not about the food. You got to give there for the information. But thank you, Paul, for being so hospitable with the hors d'oeuvres or what have you for the event. And if you just tuned in, we're visiting with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. The website, again, riograndefoundation.org. And we're going to come back and talk more about some content from the place where Paul puts these blogs that he writes, and others contribute from time to time at errorsofenchantment.com. We'll be back with more right after the break on ABQ Connect. Well, thanks for joining us. We've got about 10 or 12 more minutes to wrap up with Paul Gessing. Time really flies, and there's a lot of great information. If you missed some of the broadcasts, make sure to watch for it archived at abqconnect.online. We'll do our best to get it posted quickly because it's timely information with what's going on in the Roundhouse, the current session, just days away from wrapping it up. What, a couple weeks, Paul?
No, it's less than 2 weeks, March 22nd at noon. That is a Saturday.
We're going to turn around. It's going to be here. So let's move on from errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, you put together an article, bipartisan support for a $2 billion Medicaid trust fund?
And Medicaid is a critical issue, and it's gotten some attention at the national level as well with regard to the Trump administration trying to restrain government spending. And, the old line is, you know, why did you rob banks? And the criminal says, well, that's where the money was. Well, the money at the federal level is in the Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid systems. Now, Medicare is for older people. It is a government entitlement program, as they say. Social Security, also same deal, just not healthcare related, much more oriented towards the financial aspect of aging. And then Medicaid, which is ostensibly for the poor, but also has components related to long-term care and hospital and other coverage for the elderly. But New Mexico is a state that we've talked about, has continued to spend a lot on Medicaid. That spending is augmented by the federal government. So this is a joint federal state program with 78% of the tab picked up by the feds, 72% by the feds, 28% by New Mexico. So the problem is it gets real expensive real quickly. And in just a few years ago, fiscal year 2023, we're talking about fiscal year 2026 right now. In 23, New Mexico and the feds combined to spend about $9.1 billion on Medicaid. That number is going to jump to $15.5 billion this fiscal year. So we're talking a $6 billion jump in just a few short years. And this program is just going to start eating, even with our oil and gas money, more and more of our budget if there's no restraint. Now, Democrats in the roundhouse, in Congress, very much oppose any reductions to Medicaid. I think at the national level, if Trump can get it done, he should block grant the money to the states and let them manage it and try to, you know, say, hey, you've got a certain amount of cash, and once you, you know, use all that, you have to pay for things yourself. It's kind of like good parenting with a teenager, right? And then there was a trust fund supported on a bipartisan basis, at least in the Senate. You know, with all the money we have, throwing $2 billion into this Medicaid trust fund in case the federal government won't pay the bills.
I was reading in there, yeah, what you're talking about, $2 billion in the permanent fund in part to keep New Mexico's Medicaid program afloat if the Trump administration cuts Medicaid funding. I don't want to open a whole another can of worms, but do we know why the Trump administration might they cut it? And might it be because, you know, and I don't even know where the our governor stands on men and women's sports. But, you know, you see where he's threatening to cut federal funding in other states because of actions by governors contrary to what he has mandated.
Well, this really doesn't have anything to do with kind of those DEI or racially oriented policy issues that Trump is trying to end a lot of. Instead, this is just a pure dollars and cents situation. Okay. Medicaid is a program with a lot of issues. States like New Mexico have used Medicaid to pad their budgets. So in addition to all the oil and gas, we have for years as a state used the federal match. And, you know, when 72% of those dollars are spent from the federal government, it feels like you're getting something for nothing. Of course, you're really creating a government program that ultimately is bloated and open to fraud and waste and abuse and corruption. It needs to be considered. It's one part of good government to make sure that by spending more money, I don't get a further incentive to spend even more money. That is not the way government or anything really in this world should work. You should be charged with those resources, limited as they are, and then you need to make things work if you hit up against that amount of money. there is more than enough money in Medicaid to take care of New Mexico's truly needy. It's just a flawed system as it stands right now.
Okay, we've got about 4, maybe 5 minutes, Paul. Let's jump into a resource that's available at the RioGrandeFoundation.org. We've talked about before, the Freedom Index.
Yeah, the Freedom Index is available at RioGrandeFoundation.org, and it is where you can find the votes for your legislators. Are they voting for freedom? Are they voting against freedom? We've rated all the bills, at least a vast majority of them, and assigned them vote total or point totals from -8 to +8. Go to RioGrandeFoundation.org, look for your legislators, look for other legislators all across New Mexico, and find out who is voting for freedom and who is not. And if you find your legislator or another legislator that you're aware of is voting poorly, ask them why they are voting to infringe upon New Mexicans' freedoms. In a 60-day session, you get a lot of points. You get a lot of votes voted on. And it is going to be a very, I think, insightful tool for people who are serious about understanding why New Mexico works or doesn't work the way that it works. And right now, as it stands, the House Republicans are kicking some butt and doing very well. The Senate is having some issues in terms of where they're voting just generally. There are a lot of House Democrats who have put together some really atrocious spending scores on the Freedom Index. And of course, some Republicans doing really well relative to other Republicans. So it's worth comparing and contrasting them. And of course, the more moderate Democrats doing much better than their far more progressive brethren. But yeah, it's also useful because the House votes on various bills that the House sees. The Senate votes for their own sets of bills. Like I said, the Senate scores are just lower at this point, but we'll see how it shakes out in the end, and we'll be producing and releasing all of this information within a week or so after the legislative session is done.
All right, and since we have a minute or so, Paul, I want to throw it back to you and remind people Rio Grande Foundation is a nonprofit organization, and they are funded by donations from people like you. And I'm assuming there may be some underwriting from others, Paul. But for those maybe not familiar, we've talked a little bit about like the event that's coming up here real soon. It's on the website under the events tab. You can go find out about the Lecture 2025 Healthcare in Crisis at the CNM Workforce Training Center. That's going to be on Wednesday, March 26th at 6:30. Any other things as you look down the road here in 2025 that Rio Grande Foundation, our listeners should know, they'll be a big part of?
Well, of course, we will be watching and tracking and providing details on some of the candidates running for mayor of Albuquerque. That is, kind of as we get beyond the legislative session, the governor's signing period. She'll have a few, a few weeks to sign the bills. Then she will maybe have a special session. She's already talked about that vis-a-vis Medicaid. So keep an eye out for that. And then we'll, of course, be talking about the city races, including but not limited to the mayor. There's also APS school board and city council races to discuss. So politics never sleeps in the land of enchantment.
This is true. And Paul, you're a very busy person. We aren't the only people you're spending time with on the air. We see you elsewhere and know, in addition to preparing things for errorsofenchantment.com and, of course, the things on the RioGrandeFoundation.org, you keep very busy, and your time is very much appreciated. Thanks for taking the time, really on a monthly basis, to come in and keep us posted.
Always a pleasure, Steve, and thanks to all your listeners, and hopefully you're following the legislative session, and you can sign up for our email list or check back to errorsofenchantment.com and read what we have to say about what happens in the legislative session after the 22nd and its conclusion.
All right. Next month, we'll do a post-session update. And thanks again to Paul and everyone at the Rio Grande Foundation. And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.